WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Officials investigating a close call for a passenger jet over North Dakota. It averted a midair collision with a B-52 bomber, the Delta regional jet quickly ducking out of the way.
Once safely on the ground, the pilot apologized over the intercom.
Sorry about the aggressive maneuver. It caught me by surprise. This is not normal at all.
The plane had departed from Minneapolis, flying to Minot, which is home to an Air Force base with B-52 bombers. It's unclear how close the two aircraft came, or if a cockpit alarm was activated.
That's ABC's Allison Kosick. The Palestinian Health Ministry says at least 70 people were killed on Sunday while trying to reach desperately needed food aid in Gaza. The day before, over 30 people were killed by Israeli gunfire at two aid sites. Some House Republicans now defying a call from President Trump to move on from the Epstein files. They are pushing for a vote to compel the government to release more documents related to the case. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Well, the Kiss Cam couple is still reeling from the traumatic outing at a Coldplay concert last week. According to TMZ, Coldplay frontman Chris Martin is mortified that the couple were exposed thanks to him. Astronomer CEO Andy Byron was seen canoodling with the head of his HR department, Kristen Cabot. They probably figured it was safe going into a crowd of 65,000 people to check out Coldplay. Record-breaking Music of the Spheres tour that actually started back in 2022, when Byron and Cabot were probably still just flirting. Many think Byron will resign or be forced out of his position, and as for Cabot, if she remains in HR, she'll have to get used to people laughing when they're called into her office to be scolded. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
A 10-game winning streak. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers opening a series tonight against the Mariners in Seattle, trying to keep a 10-game winning streak alive. Milwaukee beat the Dodgers in L.A. yesterday, 6-5, to move into a tie with the Cubs for first place in their division. The Brewers doing it with a roster of no-name players, according to Pat Murphy.
Monasterio stepping up, getting a huge two-out hit, RBI, Perkins. Perkins literally didn't have spring training. And what can you say about Collins? Collins, Vaughn, and Durbin have given us such a lift, but Collins has been the silent hero. He's played great defense, gotten big hits, hitting fourth in the lineup. The kid wasn't going to make the team in spring training unless there was a huge injury, and there was two of them, but he wasn't making the team. He's hitting fourth in our lineup. Vaughn was in AAA last week and couldn't break the lineup on a last place team. So, you know, we're just really fortunate that these guys are gelling and coming together and just, you know, playing hungry.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I've been trying to learn sheepshead for 40 years. My father-in-law is still a card counter, knows what everybody has. It is so easy to go, oh gosh, I still don't know who the partner is. And is that a trump card or is it not? And so I'm still asking myself all these questions while they're busy taking all of my nickels. The one thing that got me where they allow me to play is getting the app. For all the technology that's out there, that is one of the positive notes.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Maggie Dawn.
On Monday, I'll still be camping in the Northwoods, so Matt Rothschild is in the guest host chair. He'll be bringing you his thoughts about Wisconsin progressivism and, of course, some slamming poetry.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6. As Wisconsin is summer weekends being spent on the lake, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mostly sunny today with a high in the mid to upper 70s this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy, will drop to the low 60s for an overnight low. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. It's going to be warm and muggy with a high in the low to mid 80s with scattered thunderstorms possible by tomorrow night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Temperature now 65.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life.
SavedByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Jay Matt Nair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we are back from our road trip across Wisconsin, back to recap all of the weekend news. Don't miss it.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Well, the weather did not get in the way of some fun over the weekend. Thank you to everybody that showed up for the Farm Bay Boogie Tractor Parade. Although there were a few showers on Saturday morning, by the time that we were ready to roll, they were out of the area. Thank you so much for all your input on our talk text line this morning. That number, 877-301-FARM, 877-301-3276. Also heard from Stan up in the Green Bay area. It was polka days in Pulaski, and everybody enjoyed the weather up there. Also heard from Mark on the west side of Madison, about a tenth of an inch of rain they picked up over the weekend. But generally, not too bad. Now, what do we have coming our way this week, weather-wise? Does look like today we might see more of that haze from smoke, probably before 4 o'clock this afternoon. Otherwise, a sunny Monday on the way, dry. Daytime highs today, right around 82. Partly cloudy tonight, down to 64. Tomorrow, just a slight chance of showers, probably in the afternoon. Partly sunny otherwise. Daytime highs tomorrow, around 84. On Wednesday, another slight chance of thunderstorms early in the morning. Sunny on Wednesday, hot, right around 92 degrees. Stu Mucker, ag meteorologist, has weather details on the way. Also, Stephanie Hoff joining us this morning, visiting with some of the folks from Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. Stick around.
Keeping Wisconsin strong.
Rural Mutual Insurance is a proud sponsor of the Wisconsin State Fair. As a thank you for your support, they're giving away State Fair tickets. Visit ruralmutual.com/win and enter to win State Fair tickets.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
This is the sound of corn pests wreaking havoc on your crops. This is the sound of a channel field protected by Bayer's trait technology. With the RNAi technology of SmartStax Pro, the all-in corn rootworm fighter, and VT4 Pro, Bayer's widest spectrum of defense, you can stay one step ahead of ever-changing pest pressure. Find the right corn trait for your fields at channel.com/corntraits. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
It's winter in places like Australia, even though their winters aren't comparable to ours when it comes to snow and cold. But it won't be long before they get back into their fields for another growing season. One massive growing area comparable to some farming regions in South America is the Darling Downs in southeast Australia, where you'll find few barns for livestock. I'm Bob Bosel from the northern end of the world's longest barn in Eau Claire, and we visited Peter Black, who has farmed in the Darling Downs all his life, but even he isn't sure how much territory Darling Downs covers.
I can't tell you an actual area because I don't really know how big the Darling Downs is, but it covers quite a considerable area, and it's renowned for its cropping, whether it be grain crops, fruit and veggie crops, fibre crops, as in cotton. But, yeah, it's highly regarded in Australia as a productive part of the world.
Well, we're here on your Cecil Vale Farms. How big is your farm, and what's the history of your farm, and what are you growing now?
Our farm is 4,000 acres. It's been put together over several years from my father and uncle and grandfather, and now my wife and I are running the show. And it's flat country, it's a black soil, it's actually called a Cecil Vale cracking clay. Our whole farm was originally timbered, it was all cleared and all the sticks picked up, and now it's a productive grain farm.
And tell us again about the crops you grow here and what your growing season, planting, growing and harvesting season is all about here on the calendar.
Our summer, we have two seasons. We have a summer and a winter crop. So our summer crops are sorghum and mung beans for me. So your sorghum is planted in October and harvested in February or March, depending on the season. Mung beans, they're a quick cash crop. We plant them in December and harvest them in March. And then the other side of the coin is our winter crops. So we plant them anywhere from May to June. That'll be wheat, barley and chickpeas, and they're typically harvested around November.
Now, every year is different, as you know, as a farmer. Weather-wise, Mother Nature changes her plans all the time. What kind of a growing season was this past season for you?
Our sorghum crop that we've just harvested, we had our highest average yield ever. So we're pretty excited about that.
How big a yield did you have, and what's normal?
A normal yield might be 2.5 tonne to the acre, and we managed to do about 3 1/3 tonne to the acre this year, so we're pretty stoked.
Made some money?
Well, we'll make some money, but the prices are pretty ordinary at the moment, so we could have made more.
Where do you market that sorghum?
Australia typically exports a lot of sorghum, but for me, I have a relationship with a chicken farm down the road that produce eggs, and most of my sorghum gets marketed to them, and I store it and cart it down to them when they need it.
What's the price of eggs in Australia right now? That was a big deal in the United States during the election.
Well, to be honest, I don't know how much eggs cost because I don't do the grocery shopping, but I know we've had terrible shortages of eggs. You go to the supermarket and there aren't any eggs, and it's just crazy.
What about wheat and barley and some of the other crops? How did they do this past year?
Yeah, actually, we came off wheat that we harvested last November was one of our better crops as well. So I can't complain. We've had a couple of pretty good seasons in a row. So it's looking all right. So as long as it keeps going, Bob.
Yeah, that's the thing, as long as it keeps going. Well, tell me about your farming practices. We stand here, we can look over thousands of acres, and it's flat as a tabletop. So what does that mean? What kind of tillage practices and planting practices do you have? What have you developed over the years and found works the best for you?
Yeah, well, over the years, we've transitioned from complete conventional farming, as in lots and lots of tillage, and dare I say, maybe even drop a match occasionally and burn some stubble. But that's a no-no now. But then we progressed into minimum till, then into complete zero till, and now we're doing a bit of strip till as well. So it's all dry land, as in rain grown. We've got no irrigation, so totally dependent on Mother Nature when she sends the rain, which can be very trying at some times.
Now, as we stand here in our spring, your fall, it looks kind of dry. When was the last time you had rain, and do you expect more? Does Mother Nature become pretty consistent as far as the calendar if she brings rain?
Well, in recent years, it's more and more inconsistent sometimes, but typically we're out of our storm rain season now. Like during the summer, we'll get storm rains and sometimes get a fair bit of rain. And we had an inch of rain a couple of weeks ago, which wasn't too bad. But going forward from here, typically we'll just get into our winter rainfall pattern, which is just probably usually more often smaller rainfalls, which manages to get our winter crops planted and an odd fall here and there and keeps them going.
So tell me about your fertilization practices here.
We put all our fertilizer on up front and incorporate it all. So whether we put it in shallow with a single disc machine or bury it deep with our strip till machine, just depending on the season and the soil moisture, because in our black soil, strip till doesn't work when it's wet, so you go back to putting it on shallow with a disc. So you've just got to be flexible and not too rigid in your ways of farming and just be able to go with the flow as the seasons predict, because Mother Nature is in control when you're a dryland farmer, and we just got to adapt to what's there at the time. And the main thing is we've got to get the fertilizer on before plant so we're ready to go.
Peter Black is with me, a farmer here in Darling Downs in Queensland near Brookstead on Cecil Vale Farms. Peter, tell me about the value of this land and what's in it, what it's deficient in, and what do you have to make up for with some fertilization, NPK, whatever?
As everywhere, I think, around the world, it seems like farmland is getting more and more expensive. Like, typically now, dry land country in this part of the world is probably $6,000 an acre. Probably sounds cheap to some of you, but it's a lot for us considering it's doubled in price in not many years here. Before, it was all timbered country that was cleared many years ago. It's been deficient in phosphate since day one, so we always had to apply phosphate and nitrogen, and now we're starting to add more potassium to the mix because I think we mined it for too many years, not putting enough on. I think we've got to step up our game and try and get our nutrient levels back up.
And in this drier climate, do you have problems with diseases on these crops?
We can have trouble mainly in wheat with diseases. If we have a wet winter, we might have to spray some fungicides, but typically our summer crops, no, not too bad, especially sorghum. Sorghum's a very hardy crop, and it's not prone to many diseases we can get through. We have more insect pressures and things with sorghum rather than diseases.
How do you market those crops? Do you have local elevators you can take it to? Do you contract month by month? What do you do?
Yeah, well, we've got plenty of options, and if you're brave, you can stick your neck out and forward sell stuff if you want to, but as a dryland farmer, I'm never brave enough to do that because you never know what you've got. But, yeah, we can take it to the local elevator. There's usually a cash price of the day. You can sell it on the day. You can store it there on a monthly warehousing fee and then sell it at whenever you want to whoever you want to. There's always a price in the depot. And then sometimes the depot's not the best place to have it, just the way the market dictates. You're better off selling it ex-farm to a feedlot or a chicken farm, or it'll go to the city and get boxed up into containers and all get exported.
With this being such crop area, are there any feedlots around here that make it conducive to sell to them, or is it put wheels under this stuff, it gets pretty expensive?
There's feedlots around. I don't tend to sell to feedlots direct or anything like that. Stuff that gets taken to the elevator and sold X there, who knows where it ends up. It could go to a feedlot. It could go on a ship. It could go anywhere.
And I got to ask you, too, we talked about disease pressure. What about weed pressures? What are some of the toughest weeds that you have around here? There's one I've never heard of before.
Yeah, well, our toughest weed probably at the moment is feathertop Rhodes grass. And it's many years ago we never had it. Now it's just moved in. You've got to keep on top of it. Otherwise, the patches just get bigger and bigger and bigger. But we've got chemicals that can control it, expensive to do, but with the advent now of these likes of weeded camera sprayers, any of those type of sprayers now, they're fantastic because you're only spraying the weed. So you can use expensive chemicals and target the weed.
So like farmers everywhere, Peter Black also has to deal with weeds and insects, even though they may come by a different name. Peter Black from Darling Downs in Queensland in southeast Australia. From the northern end of the world's longest barn in Eau Claire, I'm Bob Bosold.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as ag meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
A new choice. The Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. WISS.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. An unwelcome surprise for Wisconsin farmers looking to apply for the Federal Rural Energy for America program, or REAP. The popular program helps rural small businesses and farmers invest in money-saving energy efficiency upgrades and clean energy. But the application window that was supposed to open July 1st was abruptly closed by the USDA. The agency says it's delaying the grant application window. The EPA is awarding a $700,000 grant to help Kenosha County pay for the final phase of restoration of the Pike River. Crews are restoring banks and habitat along the river and planting native pollinator-friendly plants. The project is aimed at improving the quality of water flowing into Lake Michigan. For a deep dive into environmental issues impacting Wisconsin, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember, we're a team that plays together. Listen, the winning will take care of itself. We just have to get everyone involved.
In interscholastic sports, we celebrate what makes every one of us unique. And in the pursuit of a common goal, everyone in the huddle, in the bleachers, and in the community comes together. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I'm live from Madison, where I welcome director-producer John Roach, and Max Inc. Radio's Rocker joins me in studio for some Atwood Fest chat. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. From Oshkosh to Nina, this is 98.3 WISS.
Text comments this morning about just a trace of rain that rolled through. I guess the catch is when it rolls through. I had my Farm Bay Boogie tractor parade on Saturday, and I was more than a little anxious because it rained in the morning. But boy, it cleared out. My tractor drivers showed up. It was a great day, and it did help to moderate that temperature just a little bit.
Just a little bit. We had some activities over here in eastern Wisconsin on Saturday evening. I've got some reports that it was close to a half inch, you know, about that 7:30 time. Made for a little dampness in the middle of the weekend, but the Sunday turned out great. So, you know, it was a good summertime weekend, no doubt there. There's a stationary front that's off to our south today, Pam, and there's a heat dome building. I think we've all heard it this weekend, how it's going to get hot. In fact, I already see northern Illinois under an extreme heat watch starting Wednesday. I think we'll all be there. It's going to get a whole lot warmer. The stationary front today, scattering from Wyoming to Nebraska, Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, just off to the south of Wisconsin. Radar indicating some rain in west central and northwest Minnesota, northeast South Dakota with a little thunderstorm activity this morning that may cross into far northwestern Wisconsin late today or this evening. I don't expect much to be a widespread system there. Just a little rain could make its way in, but then we start to get some instability as that heat really does begin to build on in, and a small chance of rain again into Tuesday. And then by Wednesday, that very hot weather in store, rain becoming more likely again later in the week. That should help to knock that heat down somewhat. But Wednesday, probably the hottest day of the week, and only just a degree or two cooler by Thursday and even into Friday, not cooling down too quickly. Very warm weather at the end of the week. We'll have all those heat advisory warnings, you know. Take care, don't overdo, hydrate, and do all you can to keep cool. That will be happening for all of us as we make our way on to the mid and later part of this week. I'll have forecast details right after this.
Hey, Wisconsin, are you feeling summer? Then it's time to feel cheesy. It's time to feel good. July 31st through August 10th, only at the Wisconsin State Fair. Presented by U.S. Cellular.
This is the sound of corn pests wreaking havoc on your crops. This is the sound of a channel field protected by Bayer's trait technology. With the RNAi technology of SmartStax Pro, the all-in corn rootworm fighter, and VT4 Pro, Bayer's wider spectrum of defense, you can stay one step ahead of ever-changing pest pressure. Find the right corn trait for your fields at channel.com/corntraits. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
All righty, Stu, let's have that forecast.
All right, one we hadn't talked about again, some smoke probably building into western and northern Wisconsin here today. Pay attention for that. Otherwise, mostly sunny skies on this Monday, and there'll be some near 80s in the south, upper 70s elsewhere. Not uncomfortable. Winds becoming southeast about 5 to 10. Overnight, partly cloudy, a slight rain chance late night in western and northwest Wisconsin. Dry elsewhere. We hold in the low to, well, call it the very low 60s or mid-60s in a few spots with those southeast breezes. Tuesday, partly sunny, and again, some chance of rain in the west and north a bit later in the day. Almost anywhere late Tuesday could be some rain. That's where we'll be up in the low and mid-80s. And by Wednesday, Pam, sunny, hot, just some rain chance again in the afternoon further north. The south is hot, where we talk about 90 or low 90s. Heat indexes mid-90s and higher. Southwest winds 5 to 10, and maybe a little cooler Thursday. Could be closer to 90, but it's going to be pretty sticky and warm midweek.
I'm not surprised. I look at the fair lineup. We've got Racine County Fair, Washington County Fair, Rock County Fair, Columbia County Fair. It seems like every year when I have those fairs to visit, it's miserable, quite frankly.
It gets summery.
Yeah, very much so. All right, dude, catch up with you tomorrow and see what the outlook looks then.
All right, we'll catch you then.
Stu Muck, our ag meteorologist, with your Compeer Financial Ag Weather Update. Again, check out all the resources they've got available online, compeer.com. Also on the way, Stephanie Hoff visiting with one of our dairy producers that sits on Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. They're getting ready for the Wisconsin State Fair. That's on the horizon.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, where Maggie sat down with economist Benga Agyilor, talking about what the impacts will be to rural health care with the current budget bill working its way through Washington.
Tell us what's at stake, what's currently baked into the budget reconciliation bill that will directly impact our rural communities and the health care that they can access when it comes to this $880 million in Medicaid cuts that's slated to occur.
What's happening with Medicaid, and the reason why this is such a big deal, is that they're cutting, you know, as you said, it's a massive amount, probably the biggest cut that we've seen in over 40 years, $880 billion. But the way that they're doing the cut is by adding work requirements and other administrative burdens to basically kick people off of Medicaid. If you're not, you know, if you don't have health insurance, then you're not, quote unquote, you know, spending money on health, then that's going to, you know, cause the quote unquote savings. And so the issue here is that insurance is important to help out with the hospitals, as the impact of these rural hospitals, that their financial viability, a lot of time is based on Medicaid. And so I'll just throw out a few stats. So first of all, nearly half of all births in rural areas are financed by Medicaid. 47% of children are covered by Medicaid. And, you know, one of the reasons why is that when people are using healthcare and they don't have insurance, the hospital still has to take care of them because that's what they do. And so you have all these uncompensated care costs. And just as a comparison, in states that expanded Medicaid, 3% of uncompensated care costs are for hospitals in states that expanded Medicaid. In states that did not expand Medicaid, it's over 7%. And so you see that now with this cutting the $880 billion and, you know, up to upwards of almost 14 million people becoming uninsured, that's going to have dire impacts for rural hospitals.
So if a woman is having a baby, what is particularly risky about this scale of cuts to Medicaid is that as we move forward, if these cuts are adopted, it will be less likely that that woman will enter a hospital during childbirth with Medicaid. And if she doesn't have Medicaid and doesn't otherwise have health insurance, the hospital, of course, still has to care for her.
You've been listening to a portion of a recent episode of The Maggie Dawn Show, which airs across the Civic Media Radio Network weekdays from 4 to 6 p.m. Find the full broadcast lineup at civicmedia.us/shows.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to WISS.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Officials investigating a close call for a passenger jet over North Dakota. It averted a midair collision with a B-52 bomber, the Delta regional jet quickly ducking out of the way.
Once safely on the ground, the pilot apologized over the intercom.
Sorry about the aggressive maneuver. It caught me by surprise. This is not normal at all.
The plane had departed from Minneapolis, flying to Minot, which is home to an Air Force base with B-52 bombers. It's unclear how close the two aircraft came, or if a cockpit alarm was activated.
That's ABC's Allison Kosick. The Palestinian Health Ministry says at least 70 people were killed on Sunday while trying to reach desperately needed food aid in Gaza. The day before, over 30 people were killed by Israeli gunfire at two aid sites. Some House Republicans now defying a call from President Trump to move on from the Epstein files. They are pushing for a vote to compel the government to release more documents related to the case. This is ABC News.
a 10-game winning streak. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers opening a series tonight against the Mariners in Seattle, trying to keep a 10-game winning streak alive. Milwaukee beat the Dodgers in L.A. yesterday, 6-5, to move into a tie with the Cubs for first place in their division. The Brewers doing it with a roster of no-name players, according to Pat Murphy.
Monasterio stepping up, getting a huge two-out hit, RBI, Perkins literally didn't have spring training. And what can you say about Collins? Collins, Vaughn, and Durbin have given us such a lift, but Collins has been the silent hero. He's played great defense, gotten big hits, hitting fourth in the lineup. The kid wasn't going to make the team in spring training unless there was a huge injury, and there was two of them, but he wasn't making the team. He's hitting fourth in our lineup. Vaughn was in AAA last week and couldn't break the lineup on a last place team. So, you know, we're just really fortunate that these guys are gelling and coming together and just, you know, playing hungry.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time after a massage, a chiropractor appointment, and some sleep. We'll be back with regular programming from Madison on Monday. Join us then.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. Connecting audiences, powering brands. This is Civic Media. Learn more at civicmedia.us/advertise.
Mostly sunny today with a high in the mid to upper 70s this afternoon. Tonight, partly cloudy. We'll drop to the low 60s for an overnight low. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. It's going to be warm and muggy with a high in the low to mid 80s with scattered thunderstorms possible by tomorrow night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Right now, it's 64.
You've been waiting for it all year? It's finally here. It's Amanda with another new Wisco 411 for you, brought to you by Area 509 in Appleton. Which, speaking of, it's Appleton's Children's Week from July 20th through the 26th. This event hosts hundreds and thousands of families throughout the city of Appleton for safe and healthy recreation, with discounted or free activities all throughout the city, like at the playground fair, a free day at the YMCA, and so much more. So go check it out by going to WISS.FM and clicking events.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Folks just deserve a little bit better than the usual promises that they're getting. But our members of Congress, two of them from here in Wisconsin, recently signed a letter to Canada and said, Canada, you're on fire. You need to do something about this, which is really not necessarily the best course of action when your neighbor's house is burning down, is to send a letter complaining about the smoke.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. Here at Civic Media, we believe radio plays an important role in strengthening our communities by focusing on what is happening here and now. Our broadcast lineup strives to bring you real news and great conversation throughout your day. We now bring you a conversation from a recent episode of the Busted Pencils podcast, talking about how AI or artificial intelligence is being utilized in rural classrooms.
I mean, really, I think it was reading so many of these books, like educational, like more theory-based books. It's like we gotta put theory into action. So it was kind of like a happen chance where we stumbled across, you know, Khan Academy with their Khanmigo, like their AI tutor bot. There's a lot more like technology sources, like embedding AI into them. So we started to look at what would be the capabilities of a classroom if we let some of the tier one instruction be turned over to AI. So where students are actually receiving learning. I mean, as adults, if I want to learn how to change a faucet, I go and watch a YouTube video. Mm-hmm. Kids, this generation of kids, they want to learn via technology. They want to learn via videos. And so, I mean, I think it was just like this perfect storm of like students being disengaged. You know, I was an instructional coach and associate principal. I've sat through my fair share of lessons that I, as the adult, was bored. So it's like all these problems of practice that we were trying to like find a way to solve. And it's like, well, we have something right in our hands. And so what would it look like if we could turn over some of that tier one instruction to a tutor bot or to personalized learning via an online platform, and let the teachers do the depth of knowledge and challenge-based learning and really bringing in those real-world connections.
Tell us, you know, rural Wisconsin. So this is happening then in rural Wisconsin.
It's happening. I mean, we have schools that are, I mean, we started off as like a little pilot, and now it's like, I feel like every day it's like, what's going on? Like, what is going on? And in this idea of rethinking or rebuilding like public education, I think each district that we work with kind of faces their own problem of practice. We have a district that couldn't really hire a physics teacher. So they, how can they take a teacher that has no physics background and use AI to truly help teach the kids? We have districts who are like, you know what? No, we're going to teach math, science, ELA, all the content. We're going to teach that, and we're going to reduce that time down so the kids get it all.
You've been listening to a portion of the Busted Pencils podcast. To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to our website, civicmedia.us/shows.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Matt Nair on Air.
When he's going to make the kind of money he is this year.
Boy, I just have to say thank you again to all the tractor drivers that showed up for the Farm Babe Boogie Tractor Parade on Saturday morning. It looked a little iffy for a while there. We had some showers that rolled in, but boy, I'll tell you what, my tractor drivers, they showed up. Thank you again. If you haven't seen pictures yet, pop on over to Midwest Farm Report on social media. I popped a few up there for you to take a glance at. Welcome back, everybody. I'm the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report on this, the 21st day of July. Boy, the month is slipping right through our fingers, isn't it? Let's see, on this day back in 1969, the first person walked on the moon. Do you remember who it was? Probably a part of your history lesson. Neil Armstrong, first person that stepped on the moon's surface. And what famous phrase did he coin? One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. First person, Neil Armstrong, to walk on the surface of the moon this day back in 1969. On this day in 2011, the space shuttle flew its last mission, the 135th mission, as a matter of fact, and it was the last one for the space shuttle flight program and the American Space Shuttle program. Happened on this day, 2011. On this day in 1983, the lowest temperature ever measured on Earth. You want to guess where it was? A Russian station on Antarctica. They experienced temperatures that fell to minus 128.6 degrees Fahrenheit. Minus 128.6 degrees Fahrenheit on this day back in 1983 in Antarctica. Let's see. On this day in 1972, anybody that was there? Did you go to Summerfest? It was the day that George Carlin, actor, comedian, was arrested for performing his seven words you can't say on TV skit. Remember that one? If you found an unedited version, you know what I'm talking about. Anyhow, he was arrested on this day back in 1972 at Summerfest for performing that routine. And now you know. Well, we need to know what's going on with our Wisconsin Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. Hardworking dairy farm families from all across the state contributing their dollars towards education, promotion, and research. Stephanie Hoff's got an update.
Dairy is always a popular theme at the Wisconsin State Fair. There are so many ways to interact with the industry and the farmers themselves during the best 11 days of summer, July 31st through August 10th, courtesy of Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. I'm Stephanie Hoff, along with you for this month's episode of Checking In with Dairy Checkoff. We welcome Jody Miller this morning. She represents Iowa and Lafayette counties on the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin board. Jody farms between Avoca and Highland in the Driftless area, milking about 260 cows on their third generation farm. Jody, you're wrapping up your first year on the board with a bang at the Wisconsin State Fair. Tell us what you've got going on this year.
Our theme this year is care of cows. It's what we do. And we're really proud of that because we have demonstrations going on throughout the fair, and we're educating the public on how really serious we take care of our cows, how important they are to our operations. Everything we do is for the cows, and what a great forum to showcase that to people that maybe don't understand dairy.
You're a farmer, so they can hear it firsthand, the animal welfare that takes place on a dairy farm. Give us a sample of some of the stuff that will be showcased to represent that theme. Care of cows is what we do.
One of the things we're really proud of, and it's a crowd favorite, we supply T-shirts to the youth. They get out a very powerful fact. Something we're really proud of is that 99% of dairy farmers in Wisconsin are family owned. And it's a great reminder of who's really behind Wisconsin dairy. So that's something we do. We also, the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin, we are involved in the judging of educational dairy exhibits, and we sponsor youth showmanship awards. And it's a really great way to celebrate the next generation of dairy leaders that are coming. We involve farmers. Farmers are real active in this. We have media interviews throughout the week, so the public hears directly from the people that are producing their food. It's really nice to get it right from the horse's mouth to get, you know, have a little more faith in where your food's coming from, I guess.
Media interviews with consumer-facing news organizations. I mean, Wisconsin State Fair is in West Allis, Milwaukee, so you're reaching an urban audience.
Definitely, and that's our goal. Our goal, you know, is always to inform people. We are always have open door policy at our farm. If anybody has a question about how anything's going, or they're welcome to come. I'd love to tell them about our story. Another thing we help with is the Blue Ribbon Dairy Production Auction. We help coordinate the auction, and then we create a cheese board that showcases the champion cheeses. And it's really one of the highlights of the fair. Wisconsin's the only state that requires a license to make cheese, which I thought that's something I learned as being on the board. I didn't realize that. And really, really, really proud of the fact that our milk goes into make cheeses that have won awards nationally and internationally. So that's something that we're pretty proud of as well. So that's going to be showcased at the fair as well.
It's always a treat when I get sent to cover that Blue Ribbon Dairy Product Auction. It's just an awesome auction to be a part of anyway, a good cause that supports the next generation of dairy leaders. But also, yeah, that cheese board is something you don't want to miss.
I've learned so much in doing those because, wow, they are awesome. And the different kinds of cheeses. I mean, I've been a dairy farmer my whole life, and I have really been opened up to new cheeses. And wow, what a wonderful, wonderful array we have. So there's daily milking demonstrations. People that aren't familiar with it can actually watch milking be done. The Wisconsin State Dairy Fair Dairy Promotion Board works with us and helps introduce all that to fairgoers. It's a great way to see everything in action. So,
as you're involved with Dairy Lane and those milking demonstrations, as you talked about, do you get questions from the crowd that you as a dairy farmer don't think about every day, but maybe some of the consumers who aren't from a farm may not know?
Something that's really wonderful with the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin Board is there's never a dumb question. And you'd be really surprised. And even where I live, how rural I live, the kids around really don't have a clue. So, yes, there's a lot of questions that you are kind of taken aback by, like, well, you know, you'd think that's common sense, but, you know, it's a great way to tell people exactly where everything's coming from. So what a great, great thing to be able to talk directly with them and show them. Sometimes showing is easier than, you know, trying to explain something. So with the live demonstrations and stuff, kind of takes a lot of the questions, just show them as well too. So the milk and cheese and everything is such a very natural and really great product for you. And to see, you know, that it's not a bad thing. The cows like to get milked. They don't want to keep the milk. You know, it's the cows are happy, taken care of. And that's what people want to know. The consumer wants to be happy with what they're consuming.
The theme, as you said, is care of cows. It's what we do. Do you have an animal welfare story that you're going to be sharing with the public of how you keep your cows happy on the farm?
Everyone on our farm, my husband and any of our employees and our family that work for us, I have a sign in our parlor that says, treat every cow like a lady. And that is truly how we do it here. Everything we you know, from the crops that we produce, the way we take care of the land and make sure that it's around for years to come. That's our story. And our cows are our babies and they need to be treated as such. So that's how we, you know, are hopefully going to keep going for generations.
Jody Miller, looking forward to the best 11 days of summer. The Wisconsin State Fair, July 31st through August 10th in West Allis. At the fair, you'll see dairy represented all around you, from the barn to the activities and, of course, the food, courtesy of Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. Jody Miller is a board member joining us for this month's Checking In with Dairy Checkoff. Learn more about how checkoff dollars drive demand for Wisconsin dairy at wisconsindairy.org. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
Wisconsin soybean growers have a lot of choices when it comes to selecting seed varieties. If you're a seed dealer, help make their choice a little easier by shining the spotlight on your products through the Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. By entering customers in the contest by the August 31st deadline, seed dealers will receive $100 for one grower, $200 for three, and $300 for five or more. Growers must complete an entry and harvest form to qualify. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
You're invited to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek for this year's Farm Technology Days, Generations of Progress. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment, innovative techniques, and taking a glimpse into the next generation of agriculture. There's also a rotary parlor, seminars, and, of course, field demos of all kinds. Mark your calendars for August 5th through the 7th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information and show details, visit wifarmtechdays.org.
Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Report. I am Farm Director Pam Yonke, and as we roll into a Monday trade session, I can tell you that the Dow Jones Industrial Average right now trading up more than 100 points. On Friday in Chicago, the barrel cheese was a penny stronger at 166. 40-pound block cheese was up a quarter at 164 and a quarter, while AA butter dropped a penny and three quarters to 251 and a quarter per pound. The August Class 3 milk that goes into cheese is up 13 cents right now at 1790. September is up 9 at 1832 a hundredweight. A little softer in our grain trade. September corn's down 3 right now. December new crop down 3 at 425. Soybeans for August are down a dime. November new crop down 9 at 1027. September wheat's down a penny and a half at 545. December's down 2 at 565 a bushel. Well, we have got plenty of county fairs to keep you entertained this week. Remember, you can always find them online, wifairs.com, under the events tab. Later this week, we are going to enjoy the Rock County Fair, Washington County Fair, Columbia County Fair, Monroe County Fair, Racine County Fair, all coming this week. WIFairs.com under the events tab will point you in the right direction. Well, the next direction we're headed is finding out what you're paying for meat in the grocery store, and is it changing? Jeff Swenson with the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection keeps an eye on what's happening with the meat showcase. Now, you might think after the 4th of July holiday, things slowed down as far as the grilling season. But this year, we are seeing anything but a slowdown. Ben Jarbo joins us next with that story right now on a Monday morning. Thanks for joining us.
Can't get enough farm news? The stories you hear and more 24/7 at MidwestFarmReport.com. Stay tuned as we'll be right back.
Finally, a voice for real news and great conversation in the Fox Valley, WISS.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The Wisconsin Elections Commission issued a highly critical report of the City of Madison's former clerk after investigating how 193 mail-in ballots were left uncounted after the 2024 general election. The clerk was suspended by the city, then subsequently resigned. November 12th, a staff member alerted City Clerk Mary Beth Witzel Bell that a sealed ballot courier bag had been found, but Witzel Bell allegedly gave the staff no instructions to open or otherwise investigate, did not alert state or county officials, and went on vacation the next day. Just before Thanksgiving, unaware that an unopened bag had been found, an elections inspector reported a discrepancy in wards 56 and 65. December 2nd, inspectors found another unopened courier bag containing 125 uncounted ballots. The 400-page report found several leadership and procedural failures. It concluded, quote, rather than acknowledge these significant errors, the city clerk and her staff either ignored the issue or willfully refused to inform the necessary parties and seek assistance. These actions resulted in nearly 200 lawful voters' votes going uncounted, an unconscionable result, unquote. The report orders the city of Madison to complete several procedural reforms before the next statewide election in February 2026. We've linked to the full report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We've got Chris from Nina. What's your thought this afternoon, Chris?
Oftentimes you have only one set of viewers that will watch Fox News or watch CNN. What I really actually love and respect from all your viewers is the fact that you tend to have viewers that think on both sides of the aisle. To be open-minded, you need to be willing to listen and learn and possibly change your mind. You don't have to change your mind, but just being willing to listen.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of the Todd Allball Show.
Maggie Dawn.
On Monday, I'll still be camping in the Northwoods, so Matt Rothschild is in the guest host chair. He'll be bringing you his thoughts about Wisconsin progressivism and, of course, some slamming poetry.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
A new choice. The Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, WISS.
Pork. As well as how recent new tariffs may impact the U.S. producers.
It's interesting because we typically would see beef and pork demand change. I wouldn't say that it necessarily goes down, but we on the beef side, we typically move away from those whole muscle cuts after the 4th of July. So we're not grilling ribeyes and T-bones. People tend to eat less, eat lighter meals after the 4th of July. And that means that grilling out changes. It's a lot more hamburgers, hot dogs, bratwurst, things like that, especially in Wisconsin. We really like our sausages. With that said, beef demand domestically and pork demand, for that matter, have stayed very, very strong coming out of the holidays.
Yeah, that's a interesting kind of phenomenon, because usually, yeah, you would think that the demand might decrease a bit because everyone's done with their big family grill outs from the 4th of July. And I mean, when we look at that, we also now have new tariffs enacted on China and Canada, and that might hurt some exports. Are you hearing any reports of that or seeing anything?
I think it's you know, tariff news and export sales are something that we've been talking about for weeks now. And we did see the United States Meat Export Federation came out with their May totals, and we did absolutely see that beef and pork exports were lower. But they still work hard to try to develop markets that maybe are just emerging, and that maybe the tariffs aren't as impactful. So we'll wait and see what happens there. But it is definitely something that's being talked about in the markets on a very, very regular basis right now.
And to kind of go along with that, has there been an increase in that domestic demand? I know you're saying it's still high for this pork and beef, but has there been any increase due to needing to use more domestically, or have you heard of any new markets opening up for our meat here in the U.S.?
Yeah, let's tackle the domestic supply or domestic demand first. I think that there's a couple of factors that we need to keep in mind. So it's difficult to make Americans eat more meat than they're already eating, although consumption of meat, especially red meat, has gone up slightly over the past couple of years. We really saw a change in eating habits, I think, during that COVID period of 2020, where people are now becoming more meat friendly. So meat per capita consumption has increased, but it's difficult to make Americans eat more beef. That number, that per capita number per pound or by pound, typically stays the same. It changes. They might eat more pork than beef, depending on price. They might eat more chicken than red meat when that price is attractive. But getting Americans to eat even more meat than they do now is really an uphill battle. And then we need to remember the type of products that we do export. So when we look at exporting the lower value items that U.S. customers tend to shy away from, so we export a lot of tongue and short plate and liver when it comes to beef and what we call entrails or intestine when it comes to pork. it would be difficult to make Americans change their eating habits to eat more of that. So we really look for export markets to add value to our livestock by exporting what we would call lower priced items into those markets. So it's going to be difficult if exports continue to decrease. It's going to be difficult for Americans to eat our way out of the challenge.
And if we look at, say, the harvest side of it, last time we talked, you were seeing a lot more heavier animals going into the slaughterhouses there. Is that still what you're seeing right now, or has it been more numbers, lower weight?
It continues to be a tale of heavier cattle. Now, again, we're talking about seasonality. During this discussion, and from a seasonal standpoint, we'd expect the higher heat periods in cattle feeding regions to affect rate of gain. Cattle would typically be lighter. We're not seeing that decrease. In fact, cattle are right now about 24 pounds heavier than they were this time last year. So those carcass weights and the live weights still continue to creep up on us.
Swenson says another part of this interesting trend is the lamb markets. He says that they are holding strong, and that is because they found new markets in the Bahamas, where lots of Americans go for vacation, and they are buying up a lot of lamb meat. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
The Todd Allbaugh Show.
I came walking in here just a moment ago, and there was a young lady sitting here with a chicken.
It's fantastic.
On the table.
Kaylee High from Staley Boyd High School. What's the line of birds?
So this Sue. She's a Dominique, and she's 6 years old.
Is Sue here? Does she lay eggs?
She did used to. She's too old.
So chickens go through menopause?
Yes. Yeah,
really?
Much. Yeah, basically.
It's a postmenopausal chicken. My sisters can relate.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
What happens to plants when heat is too high? Next on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health Campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. Plants are like people in that they can take a certain amount of heat, but when the heat is excessive, things can go badly. Plants can be pretty tolerant of warm summer days, says North Carolina State University Extension agent Minda Daughtry.
Most plants really like it, especially vegetables, between about 68 degrees and about 86 degrees.
In much of the country, we've seen temps topping that range this summer. Daughtry says heat stress signs are pretty obvious in plants.
Growth is going to be inhibited, and your yields are going to be stunted. For example, if you're growing tomatoes or a lot of your broadleaf plants, you're going to see the leaves wilting or rolling or cupping because those plants are losing water faster than they can absorb it. If you have fruit on there, your flowers are going to abort because it's just too hot to carry on major functions. You're going to have blossom drop and fruit drop to conserve energy. Some cool season vegetables like your lettuces or your spinaches may prematurely flower in order to get through their life cycle.
Daughtry says heat stress symptoms in plants often resemble symptoms of certain plant diseases. For example, leaf and stem wilting and curling and premature blossom and fruit drop. You can look online for how to address heat stress in specific plant species. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we are back from our road trip across Wisconsin, back to recap all of the weekend news. Don't miss it.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
It's ice cream month, and did you know you can celebrate at this area stop along the state's ice cream trail? Here's the scoop.
Now, in Wisconsin, we've got 49 different licensed ice cream plants that are making it. But this map focuses in on unique stops in Wisconsin. Every one of them's got a story.
That's Pam Yonke, known as the Fabulous Farm Babe. She says the current trail includes 20 locations, each one from Hayward to La Crosse, Madison, and then north to Appleton, Green Bay, and Door County, dishes out delicious, locally made ice cream.
I've been to one or two, but I'm surprised by how few I've gotten a chance to visit, and I'm a pretty big ice cream fan.
Find the trail at the website gatherwisconsin.com and add your own local favorite there, too. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is WISS Berlin-Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein-Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Shiri Preston, an off-duty Border Patrol agent recovering after being shot during a botched robbery attempt in New York City over the weekend. Police don't think he was intentionally targeted, but they do say the suspect was in the U.S. illegally and had a long criminal record. A deadly day in Gaza as Israeli troops open fire near a crowd of Palestinians trying to get food. ABC's Patrick Reval.
Nearly 70 killed and more than 150 wounded, according to the Hamas-run health ministry. The bloodshed happening as thousands were desperately seeking flour in northern Gaza. This man says, "We raised our hands like this, signaling we were peaceful. Then they started firing at us." The IDF, questioning the casualty figures, saying they fired to remove a, quote, immediate threat.
More cries for more information in the Jeffrey Epstein case, as those clamoring for it say releasing grand jury transcripts could take a long time and would ultimately require the approval of a judge. This is ABC News.